Thank you everybody for coming back in time. We're heading straight for the next session, and it's the research projects and investment involvement. Alan, the floor is yours.
Thank you. You have a slide deck that's 18 pages long, or 19, but it's actually only one page I want to focus on today. But before we get there, that'll be page 18, and that's about the input from the investor community. I will give you just very brief sort of segue into the discussion. But the front 17 or so slides are just as a reminder of the way we've changed our, the way we're approaching a lot of our projects. And that I think there's an acknowledgement that we've often come up with solutions but haven't necessarily defined the problem as clearly as we do to. And so because of that, we've sort of separated our process into two. We have a research program that contains at the moment about 40 projects. I've identified in the slide deck the high priority projects, medium and long term projects, and gave people a bit of background about how we set our priorities in there. I say this many times, it looks, if you look at 14 projects, you say, well, that's, how do you cope with that? It's too many, just can't do it. But each, they're all different levels. Some of them are sort of low level inquiries, they're certainly not all going to end up in standard setting activity. In fact, we have a paper that's going to our board next week with a recommendation from the staff that we actually take removal from the research program. And that's having done some analysis indicating on long-term foreign currency transactions that we don't need to fundamentally do a complete rewrite about foreign currency standards. So some of it, sometimes when people come to us with a problem, they say, oh, there's a terrible accounting problem we need to fix. The first thing you've got to do is actually work out whether there is a problem. And if you do some initial work to determine that, it doesn't seem to be widespread acceptance that there's something that's worth fixing, or even if there is a problem, whether sometimes the cure is worse than the problem at the moment, you can cope with what you've got. And so a lot of our assessment is, should we actually do anything? So we've got this broad range of projects on there, including discount rates, equity method, a whole lot of different issues, and this commander control is what we're looking at in the next session today. So the way I like to think of our research program is sort of the area where we do a bit of thinking about issues and question whether or not we should actually develop some work. And so the issue for you in the way is that traditionally what I think we have done is we'll come to you and ask for your help and say, look, here's an exposure draft or here's a discussion paper idea. What do you think? And what we'd like to do is to get your feedback and input about, given that we're now putting more emphasis on defining the problem in the first instance, where in the process you'd like to go. And that's a question that on page 18 has got a series of questions about timing, nature of input, some of the evidential challenges we have, and one that I'm particularly interested in is reconciling the views of basically large data studies with the anecdotal evidence or comments we get from individual investors, for example. One of the challenges I see is that I think it's almost like we've spoken to some users, probably not you guys, but other users, when they say, let me know when the thing's 6 months away and I'll comment on it. But until then, it's just an idea. They're busy and they just don't want to get engaged that far up in advance. And we've had that even with something like some of our standards that we finish, like revenue recognition. Some analysts will tell us, they'll look at it when they get closer to implementation date. They don't need to worry about it until they start to see it manifest. So we have trouble engaging sometimes with people because it feels like it's too early. And particularly if we spend time talking to you and we decide not to do anything, for us that actually could be a success because what we've done is we've found out we don't need to do anything. But it means that you haven't actually ultimately contributed to a standard. And we'd hope you'd think that was a success, not a failure. So I think we're some challenges in terms of early on, we're a little bit vague about trying to identify what the problem is, but that's the nature of trying to identify the problem, and we're asking how best we actually do that. So I'm more than happy to answer any questions about the research program generally, about the approach, but I thought the questions I've got on slide 18 might sort of frame that. So perhaps we'll go from there and those 4 points.
So we already have inspiration on the left here.
Robert,
please.
The comment about from some users about don't ask us about this until it's 6 months in is I'm they fell off my chair.
Can I clarify that they don't say that, they tell us they don't necessarily work out what the implications are for their models until they get closer.
Oh, so that's
not about talking.
Okay, so that makes sense because it moves around. But, you know, Mike, do you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
I think the time that our input would be most useful is actually very, very early in the process. I think that there are several ways or several approaches that can be applied to any sort of problem, and sort of understanding where we're coming from will ultimately provide you with some ideas and some possible solutions. And then as you talk to our team, I think in a lot of ways the preparers are much more constrained about what they can do, and my approach would be to get us involved early, say, look, what you need, and then towards the end, almost as a fatal flaw review, did we get it right, or do we have to tweak this? Is the two points that I think good user input would be most helpful, and where we would provide the best value, given that we're also very constrained, we're very constrained for time, we can't help you every step of the way on every project.
Firstly, I'd like to say I think this is a fantastic improvement in the process over the last few years. I think the ISB and the staff have been congratulated in making this change, sort of philosophical shift. I've been an advocate of evidence-based standard setting for many years. I'm encouraged to see what you call it evidence-supported decision-making, which is probably a slightly more nuanced and subtly less ambitious, but probably more realistic way of looking at it. But I think it's a very, very good thing. I agree with Robert that if you can get people engaged at an early stage and ask them, you know, is there a problem? Once you've identified that potentially it could be something that could be solved by standard setting or standard changing, it's a very good thing. I guess part of what you have to do is to then feed back to people and say, well, this is the process we went through, and this is why we've decided not to. And I think you actually do need to do that on an individual basis to an extent. If you've actually had people take the time to have a meeting with you, then it's actually worth sending them a personal email or something like that. It doesn't need to be a very sort of, you know, big formal document, but contact back to people gets them engaged and keeps them engaged in the process and reinforces the message that you're an interactive body and you want feedback from outsiders. The challenge that you've always faced, that we faced as a group and that will always persist, is that if you're talking to somebody about something rather esoteric like revenue recognition at an early stage of a project, it can be hard to get people who are very, very busy, focused on their day jobs, to engage in that. Strangely, focusing on something like IFRS 8 and segments, sort of post-implementation review, is actually much easier because people, like Jack was saying, they can say, right, well, I've seen a change in my companies and I don't like it, or I've seen a change and I do, or here's something I hoped would change and it hasn't. So I think that's an area where you will find engaging with investors and analysts actually much simpler. I think that's very valuable. Probably your most beneficial time is to get them engaged early. I don't have easy solutions there, but I think the way that you're thinking about it is a very, very positive step.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you. I wanted to kind of put a plug in for this as well, because I feel very strongly about this. And I do actually think I have stronger views than Alan has said about investor involvement early on, because I really do think it is very difficult to get views. You know, asking about the effects on their analysis, that is different because we haven't had the proposals yet, but in terms of getting the views on what needs to be fixed, maybe, even before we decide what we're working on, the timing is very difficult for a lot of investors we speak to, because our projects take a while. So, you know, if it's a 3-year or 5-year cycle, it's really difficult to get people interested for many reasons, as you can understand, even if they're just changing their jobs and then not affecting their analysis. So it is something that I think, even if we don't resolve it here, that I would continue to need some, or we would continue to need some guidance on how to get people interested, or get maybe the right people interested and get their views in a productive way, and feeding back to them is fine. So,
Elizabeth.
So I'm looking at the slide 18 and you're asking about when's the best time. It's, for me personally, I think it's all of these times, but it depends on what becomes important then is the second bullet point of the nature of the problem. So early on, I think problem identification, confirmation that there is a problem or confirmation actually that there isn't is very, very important. That's quite short, I think, input that investors would be quite happy to spend time on. I want to focus a little bit on development and perhaps the, what you might call the exposure draft stage. One of the problems or one of the issues that we have to address if we decide as an organization to respond to FASB or ISB exposure drafts is I represent a group of accounting specialists who are not directly analysts. We support the analytic function. And as we go to analysts saying, you know, here's what's being proposed, here's our views on it, what do you think? One of the challenges that we have learned to kind of deal with is actually educating them a little bit on exactly what currently standards are and why they are this way and how the rationale is. And I think that's something that the ISB needs to perhaps do, has started to do a bit more to that education, investor education. So you have us bringing investors up to the level that they need to be at or refreshing their minds then before kind of asking the questions of here's what we're thinking about changing. I think it's really, really important and would yield a lot of benefit. And related to that, I think, again, in the actual exposure draft, I think I've had this discussion with Barbara in the past. We do have starting to see some illustrative examples, but they're very, very simplistic. And it would be really, really helpful to have an anonymous company, but saying, here's what the financial checks look like now, and here's what they would look like if this standard was applied. I think you'd get a lot more investment engagement if they had that in front of them. I appreciate there are challenges in achieving that because anonymizing something as detailed as it might need to be is difficult, but I think it would be very beneficial.
I just respond very quickly. I think the other thing too is, personally, you talk about the exposure draft as being the development solution. I actually think some of our discussion papers have actually developed a potential solution. So you're not seeing all the draft as a standard, you're actually just saying, well, fundamentally, it's a provocative one, please don't respond to this one, but we're going to put emission trading schemes on the balance sheet or rate regulated, we can get assets and liabilities, and this is the way we expect to do it and why, without all the actual wording, and this is the way it will reflect itself in financial statements. Because I know that you've got a little pushback today about assets and liabilities, but if you explain that, rather than saying, here's the draft of the actual requirements, the analysis of the comparison I use is that in government, you set policies, we're going to introduce a consumption tax, here's its basic characteristics, this is what we expect to happen as a reaction, and so on. And then you send it off to the drafters to actually write the law. So rather than giving you the law, we can actually give you a slightly higher analysis and with some examples about how it would manifest itself in financial statements. And then you're focusing on that, because I worry sometimes our exposure drafts, we're asking you to comment both on the technical decisions and on the drafting. Whereas ideally, you know, we'll never get to ideal, but ideally there's more on the drafting at this stage and less on the actual technical. So I think we'll develop over time.
But I think the point that you raised about the examples, here's what it looks like today, here's what it might look like tomorrow, I think is really, really important. And just one more point, if I may, sorry.
Of course.
Excuse me.
What are you doing? We're trying to encourage dialogue and input.
Sorry.
Technical questions. I think it might be a minor point because I think anyone responding to a DP or ED can say I'm going to answer questions 1, 3, and 5 or whatever. But just some guidance on this is questions are specifically appropriate for investors for. Preparers, I think, would be helpful.
And encouraging them and telling them that it's okay just to answer 3 questions.
Absolutely.
Because that's your expertise.
That's right. Yeah. Thank
you. Okay. Kate.
I share Peter's plaudits for the way we've been involved more and more in different processes, and of course it's good for us to be involved early, and discussion papers are a good way to get us going on subjects. But you need to be a bit careful what you wish for, because you're saying that this is demand-led. Actually, this is the one that we didn't get in advance, is it? Or am I? I missed it. So I'm now looking at slides 15 and 16 as to what we are actually getting. And if I'm thinking about, we're responding to what you want, and I know I've missed that record on this, it's my last meeting, so maybe nobody will ever say it again. But what news is, as far as CFA keeps saying, is that we want priority for performance reporting. I see that's a medium priority, and that you think that you're going to back into it and pick off some aspect of it through the disclosure project. Well, you know, if I'm going to take this back to a committee and say, well, you know, they're listening to us about, in terms of their priorities and what they're looking into, and I give them stuff that sort of has equity method, you know, regulated, you know, stuff that looks actually niche,
yeah,
compared with the stuff that every survey has said they care about, which is performance reporting. I mean, how long is medium priority? Post-employment benefits, there's quite a lot of questions about those. How, you know, how long do we have to wait for some revisiting of that? So, as, you know, it's great, but you're now exposing yourself to the sort of criticism I've just made.
Maybe that's how we get the
Don't forget to mind shown by preparers as well. Inquiry methods mainly about preparers, and the major problems that we have with our interpretations committee has got a backlog, a lot of requests to interpret. We can't do it because we've got an internal conflict within the standards. So it depends on where it comes from. And I agree that the biggest feedback we got in the agenda consultation was that I think people understand how difficult it is to juggle, because everybody's got a priority. They just want us to be open and honest and explain why we chose that one over that one. And the difficulty in this, you know, if you want me to do a 3-hour session, I can explain why everyone's there and why this one's got a priority, how big that's likely to be, what we think the output might actually be, and everything's there for a particular reason. But I agree, you've got to, it's that understanding why we're doing things. And,
yeah, but to explain won't necessarily mean that we condone, actually.
I agree.
I'm not the only one who's a stuck record on this.
Okay, I had a suggestion, maybe. I remember that when the ISB was doing outreach for leases, Steve and I think Barbara did a tour amongst individual asset managers. You know, you went through a number of asset managers in the Netherlands, and the feedback I got from you, both from you and from the teams, was very positive. And you can set the agenda for the meeting to include something really tangible, you know, something that actually maybe have come out, and bring it as education. I think this is close to what Osman says. And then also on the brink, also discuss things that are in the development stage and some early on things to package it a little bit more, and just say, well, we'd like to visit you once a year. Can we grab your on a regular basis some key team members from the PMs and analysts to discuss those items and package it in a combination. I think that probably would work. I think if you Rombico, I know, and APG had a really positive note. At the start they said I only have 15 minutes, but in the end I think they were very happy with the level of discussion. So meetings, don't expect an analyst to visit a conference. They just don't do that. It's just the way it's. I mean, CEOs come to the office to present themselves. They don't go out to. I mean, it's an analyst conference of the ISB, I think, is doomed to be. If you make it educational, it starts already to be different. I mean, there's something to gain. But just a plain conference, I don't think you already observe that many analysts come there. That's, yeah, Robert.
I wanted to come back into the comment about problem definition. I look at the ones that have caused the most aggravation, leasing, insurance contracts. My favorite problem account is the extractive industries, and I'll use that one as an example. That's been around for 10 years, maybe 15 years, and we don't have a consensus on which way we want to go. So this idea that there's a problem, we think this is the fix, let's agree on that aspect of it and then we'll work out the details, is a very compelling idea, but it's also, there's a political risk. You're going to get all the lobbying up front. And there was a tradition at the ISB about let's not peek forward, let's sort of march through the logic and then we come to the right conclusion. By sort of defining the problem and also defining the answer, you may have a lot of problems. If you can succeed at it, we used this morning's rate regulated, that, you know, we think there's a rate regulated asset, was sort of the process and how would we get there, do you agree with this? It takes courage to sort of step out in front and do that. If you can do it successfully, it could speed the standard setting process a lot. But everybody's going to jump. Everybody who disagrees with you is going to jump on early, and make your life miserable. So I'm not sure how that plays out.
Okay,
Steve.
I was going to comment on what Jane said about forwards reporting. I agree with everything she says, how important it is and how you've been trying to do this for a long while. The word priority may not perhaps be the best word in this because it implies that we don't think it's important. And I'm interested that longer term projects we use a time period instead of a priority name. So I just wonder whether we should perhaps change the way in which we describe some of these things.
I should
because
say yes.
The post-employment benefits, for example, if you're in Switzerland, that is really, really important because of their contribution-based promises. And I think sort of, I know we don't call it low priority, but it's the third bucket in here. I think a lot of it's to do with how long we think we're going to take to actually be able to produce something and how advanced we are and how much research we've done in the past. I just wonder from our perspective whether we should change some of the labels.
You're also missing an opportunity to do some links. I mean, if you're doing discount rates, obviously that reads across to pensions accounting. So I think it's a bit odd to have, we've got some thematic stuff which looks as though it's in the medium long-term bucket and these big subjects. And then you've got your priority project seems to be mostly problem fixing and, you know, bits that need to be sorted out here and there. So shouldn't you have sort of, big themes like which will come up? So performance reporting will be tackled in the disclosure project. It will be tackled in materiality. But it's a sort of overarching theme, and then you've got, fixes.
It just tells me we've got distinct communication issues because, the discount rate project is about not about fixing something, but our understanding that we do have some consistencies, and we've already had meetings with the actuaries. It's part. It feeds into the project on post-employment benefits. It feeds into. Insurance, it's cross everything. And I agree. And one of our problems is that as soon as we stick something on this list, people get, there's an expectation, well, what is it? And I almost feel as if I should have a secret list of things we're thinking about, and I'm not going to stick it on the list until I understand the problem a bit better. And in some cases, we've got issues up here, and we've got a rough idea of what the issue is, but they're kind of early in the process. And it's very hard because you just see a title and trying to understand what the expectations are. And this, with performance reporting, for example, we think that 80% of the FSP project we think is picked up in both the framework and the disclosure initiative. But we have to do that mapping exercise to demonstrate it. The problem is that 20% we don't pick up is probably the most important 20% of all, which is how you structure an income statement. But we'll be picking up most of the other concepts out of FSP. We've done a map from the staff draft in 2010 to all the parts of the disclosure initiative, and we've picked up most of that, done some things that weren't being done in FSP, but have a structured income statement is probably the biggest thing. It's probably the one worthwhile doing.
Is it worth adding on to say, you made the link between discount rates, which is a project I'm working on, and post-employment benefits, just the fact that they're in different buckets doesn't mean we're not thinking about both, and actually we already have people thinking about post-employment benefits, and for example, I talk to them regularly because we tend to outreach the same people. So maybe going back to what Steve said, it is not really, doesn't mean that we're not thinking about something, it's just maybe reflects that it's going to take a little bit longer to achieve certain things than the others.
Okay, any other comments? are you fully fully inside, and do you have full overview how to proceed now to with if you solve your problem?
I'm interested in two of the latter things. And one is, you know, we talk to people. You know, the thing is, we often say there are different types of analysts and investors. It was quite clear at the advisory council. You know, there are buy side, sell side. People are interested in more corporate governance. There are the short-term traders who probably don't even look at the financial statements. There are all sorts of lots of different people, even within the same set. I bet you if you all sat down and looked at your models and thought about how you think about particular issues, there'll be variation in some of that thinking. And even if you will agree on the right approach, you'll have different expectations about the outcomes on some of those things. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't have markets. So you're kind of expecting to get different things. The difficulty we have, and it's mentioned here, across every part of the evidence, the supply chain that we have, it's biased. The only people who write to us, mainly preparers, and the auditing firms and a few others, they self-select. So we've got usually people griping about us, so there's a self-selection bias there. You're here because you've actually committed some time, but there are a whole lot of people who can't give time or don't want to, but we'd kind of like to get their views. And it's trying to get information that's representative of the broader investor community and the different types of investors. Because, you know, if you're speaking about random things and you're tossing a coin, you're supposed to toss it about 2,000 times before you get 1,000 heads and 1,000 tails to be comfortable with that. Do we have to speak to 2,000 investors to get a general sense? And I don't know how to assimilate that information. So we try to do some things. We get and talk to people in deep conversation, supplement that with surveys, and then supplement that with market-based studies where you're looking at, you know, prices as an aggregate of the way you're thinking people have done manifested, and you get slightly conflicting things. The ideal is if the market studies, what you're telling us and what the surveys tell us, are all consistent. The challenge is we actually get slightly conflicting, and often between probably what you're saying and some of the market studies, and that's why I pick up the good book one. And I think a lot of it's about the way we ask the questions. Like, you know, when you say, what do you do with goodwill write-downs, I ignore them. Now, if I asked you what you did with them in terms of a model for future profits, you might say, well, I don't just pick up the write-down and put it in there blindly. And that's a different answer to, I ignore it. But I think we're a bit blunt in some of our questions, and that's for example. So do we have to be more careful about that? How do we approach these challenges? Because our post-presentation review process has identified investors saying that they don't like goodwill write-downs, and the market study saying incremental information content.
There's one thing I do on the last subject was IFRS 8, and you know, as April said, the boards decided that there's not going to be a change. Somehow, I think some people around the room that did provide feedback and highlight really some concerns, were a bit disappointed about how easily we're not going to really fundamentally change IFRS 8. Because given that it's a straightforward, relatively straightforward standard, there's quite a bit of criticism to it. And actually, what caused the board to not, actually maybe I should ask the board, but what really caused the board not to really open IFRS 8 for a change? Because it wasn't, it made in some views, it wasn't really a change for the better.
Well, we're not saying that we're not going to do any standard setting up, because the purpose of this session was to identify whether there are things that we can improve. But in terms of a fundamental review of IFRS 8, I'm not sure that the feedback that we've had would indicate that one is necessary. It is, of course, a converged standard, and there is that to take into account as relatively converged standard, and that's to take into account as well. So I think the board's view was that completely starting again is probably not a wise thing to do at this stage, particularly given all the other issues that we have on the table and the other priorities of the board. But if there were things, as April was talking about, that we can do to make some improvements and give you better information, then yes, we should do it. So that's the position.
So basically, what you're saying is the board is open to deconverge. because the FESFI already said we're not going to.
Well, we're converged at a high level in terms of the standard and the management approach. So, but yeah,
you're open for
the fact that they don't have a particular line item, and we're suggesting that we should. I don't think we're ever going to be have a problem with that.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I wanted to pick up on Alan's comments about user input, and there are a couple of things that sort of struck me when you were talking. One was this concept of representation, and you're not going to get, there is no representation within the, you're not going to get a user representation. In fact, I would suggest that representation is only going to come from special interests, people who have particular concerns. There is a self-selection bias when you have a small group, or at least there's a legitimate concern of self-selection. I know the board does a lot of work trying to parse through what people are saying and try to piece together a consensus. So the real challenge is going to be you need a lot more, or you need to try and get more user input into the process, more people participating in different ways. And it really goes to a fundamental problem with the ISB is they traditionally had this view that you should come to us. You mentioned this conference of the comment about a conference. Users really don't have the time, the energy, or the justification to talk to the ISB. You have to really go to them as a group. It's an interesting comment that users are used to, companies go talk to users. The ISB needs to go talk to the users. It's very hard to justify user time to your boss. It's impossible to justify travel expenses to your boss if you're a user. So that you have to understand the economics. An auditor, it's great. There's economic sense to show up to a conference. For a user, you basically say to your boss, I'm going at lunchtime, I had to eat anyway, don't worry. That's the difference. Yeah. My colleagues are agreeing, and the ISB and the trustees have to understand that user input, you have to go to them, and there has to be the money in the budget, the time, the effort. You have to prepare special presentations for users. You can't use the standard model. Osman talked about the importance of training. Users are highly trained, but they're not trained as accountants. And therefore, if we're in the process of training the ISB on how users think, we don't expect you to be great at doing models. Don't expect us to be experts at putting together financial statements. It's just not we're not trained for it. And I think there really has to be you've done great progress on it, but there's still a long way to go to culturally change the feeling. To change the process, it really has to be a fundamental go to the users, and it's you're not there yet.
Maybe okay. What you have to
but you are working on it. Barbara's working very hard on it.
Please. But maybe what you have produced is so good from an analyst perspective, so we are pleased 95% of the time, and the rest we don't care about because there are so many other problems that we have to deal with. So accounting is all of a sudden not one of them. It's not on the top of the agenda.
I disagree. I think we would greatly care about if users really have the feeling they have an impact, and if the impact is more expedient than, say, 5 years ahead. I mean, so if you have impact.
But Marta, if you look at the packages that comes out from the bags each week, how much of that relates to any accounting issue at all? It's about market share, management, whatever. We are dealing with so many difficult questions, and all of a sudden the accounting is fairly good. We can wish for more, like return on capital employed in segments and so on, but we find our ways around that most of the time.
The start point
that is actually one of your problems. But look at the lease project. All of a sudden, we could gather together like 50 analysts in Stockholm discussing an accounting problem. That has never happened before. Why? Because this really was an important issue. Discount rate in pensions?
Excited.
I love the topic, but I'm the only one in finance community in Stockholm. So
we need to wrap up the session. One last comment from Jack.
No, it was to back up, in fact, what Robert was saying. For me, we like analysts are like customer in a restaurant. They take what is in them and they have in their plate. They have a menu. They never go in the kitchen to challenge the receipt. I mean, it's exactly like that. You've got only the geeks, i.e. the Michelin guide or that guide that are going in the kitchen are able to assess how the plates are doing. Frankly, it's a very limited number of people that have some time to spend and have sometimes the level to understand some of the technical questions. So if you want to go with the users, you have to go to the users. This is very important. Put them a good plate in front of them, just tasting it. And is it fine? It's as simple as that. If you ask them, well, do you have any salt inside that?
I think that's a very French way to describe
it. Jack, do you realize you've compared us, you said both that we're geeks and that we're all Michelin guides, by the way. And I'm not sure that, I like being called a Michelin guide. That's okay.
Okay, thank you so much, Adam.